Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
This is Michael Savage. I was out at the so-called Occupy San Francisco rally, protest, riot, if you want to call it, in Justin Herman Plaza, Market Street. And I actually called in a report, but it was so angry. I just listened to it. I can't run it for you. I'll try to review what I just saw out there. The fact of the matter is, these people are stuck in the past. In the crowd was Daniel Ellsberg, the anti-American, backstabbing communist, in my opinion, from the 60s, who leaked the Pentagon Papers and stabbed the American troops in the back. There he was again in the last years of his life. Again, enjoying a moment in the sun with the intergenerational communists calling for this and calling for that. I guess one of the strangest moments was one of the bums on the stage screaming on the microphone to the rabble that he said, "I'm a college dropout, but I'm a college dropout because of the racist pig society." That's what he said. Then he went on to say, "The racist San Francisco police, if we had a real state, and a governor named Ronald Reagan, the National Guard would have been brought in because the police can't do their job. And the National Guard would have gone into that mob and arrested them. But instead we have a governor who was put in place by the unions, Jerry Brown. We have a mayor, nobody knows who his name is, doing nothing. And we have police idling away millions of dollars in overtime while the rabble run wild in the streets." I got to tell you something. Most of you don't know that this is a very serious and dangerous moment in American history. Whether it be in New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles or Portland or Seattle, these are the shock troops of the communist movement in the United States of America. And behind it all, it's been verified over and over again that the Obama administration allegedly helped coordinate the Occupy movement. The Obama administration, along with the Tides Foundation, were the people who set this thing going. The fact of the matter is, the unions are behind it. The fact of the matter is, the president is deeply involved in this. And if you think this is the last act of this play, you are mistaken. This is merely the first act of the play leading up to the re-election of Barack Hussein Obama. The second act are the Republican clowns committing Harry Carey in public. As I warned you, and I'm the only one in the media that is on the conservative side who told you what was going on. Obama, by doing nothing, has seen his poll numbers rise. And that is because the power structure wants Obama to win again, which is my estimation. I estimate that the game is played as such. It is a one-party system, and I think that the older I get, the more true this seems to be to most people. When you see that both sides of the aisle are stealing as fast as they can, whether it be Pelosi and Feinstein, who are dipping their beaks into insider trading secrets, or the Republicans dipping their beaks into insider trading secrets, or Republicans buying farmland and selling it at a profit. One of the Kennedy heirs got a $1.2 billion loan for another fraudulent company, another fraudulent green company. Did you see that report? I couldn't believe how outrageous it's getting. Every day it gets worse, and you wonder why we're broke? It's not a matter of not enough taxes. It's about spending. We have a $15 trillion debt. Did you hear about that one? It's not bigger than the scandal that broke over the other few days. It's not bigger than Robert Kennedy Jr.'s green company scoring a $1.4 billion taxpayer bailout. It's not bigger than those stories. It's just that the media wants you to look only at the sex scandals. Fact of the matter is, President JFK's nephew, Robert Kennedy Jr., netted $1.4 billion in a bailout for his company, BrightSource, through a loan guarantee issued by a former employee turned Department of Energy official. That's right. Did you hear about this taxpayer bailout? Well, I'll tell you more about it on the Savage Nation. The largest shareholder is Kennedy's Vantage Point Partners. It was up to its eyes in $1.8 billion in debt obligations. It had lost $70 million on a mere $13 million in revenues. And yet they went to the government and they got a huge $1.4 billion in taxpayer money flowing into the pet projects of rich venture capitalists like Kennedy, not average citizens. It gets even worse. There are almost no jobs related to this project. The fact of the matter is $1 billion in taxpayers' money was sent to wealthy investors to bail them out of risky investments. Does that sound like a good Democrat to you? Does that sound like a good Democrat to you? And yet, the bums in the streets, they're not outside Kennedy's house. They're not outside Feinstein's house. They're not outside the houses of those who are really ripping us off. Instead, they're screaming about the Bank of America. This bank, that bank, that bank, this bank. They have been told who to go after by the unions and by the Democrats who have unleashed them on the unsuspecting public. Yes, these are dangerous times. Riots are not good for any civil society. And an impotent police force is not good for a civil society. And a governorship that is devoid of leadership is not good for a civil society, etc. and so on. To me, this is the biggest story out there. This is an astounding time to watch a very dangerous situation getting more dangerous by the moment. Again, I open it up to you on the Savage Nation. If you care to talk about this or any other topic, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back. Talk radio is not a dying medium. It is stronger than ever. It is stronger than it's ever been before. In my 16 years in radio, and we're going to be, as Harry Truman said, give him you-know-what for the next couple of years. That's our job. Our job is to be watchdogs, not to be lapdogs. And I want to thank you for giving me total and absolute freedom to do so. That's the point I'm trying to make. I wouldn't have lasted a week with another syndicator. I could never have sat down after a show and been deconstructed where they say, well, you said this, tomorrow don't say that. That's would have been the end of it for me. I've had total freedom. I need total freedom to function. And I want to thank you again. I'm glad we're going to be working together. And I know the American people, who, particularly the millions and millions of people who listen to this show, are going to breathe a sigh of relief that we have this year to look forward to together. It's had its ups and downs. But right now, we have seen the talk radio and the Savage Nation are responsible for the mighty blow that is being struck against socialism in America. And I believe this will grow when it forces the Democrats off the political landscape for having introduced Democrat socialism and worse to the United States of America.
Savage.
You have a fawning media, you have an indulgent municipal enterprise with no mayorship, you have no governorship, no governor in New York, Cuomo is worthless, Brown is worthless, they should have called out the National Guard. You've got politicians playing to this rabble, you've got unions playing to this rabble, you've got a fawning media making them into some kind of folk heroes like it's an anti-war movement. This is not a movement. This is a destructive group of children mixed in with hardcore homeless, hardcore anarchists. They're all narcissistic by insisting that resources of this society be devoted only to them and not to the genuinely needy, by the way. But you don't want to make any sense about this. You don't want to make any sense out of it. You want to just emotionally think that they're doing the right thing. Of course we want to see the Managed Funds Association called before Congress. Of course we want to see the hedge fund operators who busted our economy, as I pointed out in Trickle Up Poverty a year or two ago. Of course I would like to see them up on Capitol Hill, but you never saw them call before Capitol Hill. Of course we'd like to see former Treasury Secretary Paulson, called before Congress. Of course we'd like to see Kennedy up on Capitol Hill and Feinstein answering about how she made so much profit, how her wealth went up so dramatically during these times. But you're not seeing any of this. Instead, the street vermin are being used to distract you from what's really going on. This is exactly what they did with Bill Clinton and his acts against this society. Do you remember what Bill Clinton was doing to us? The China Gate, the Cattle Gate, the this gate, the that. They were all real scandals. And what did the fawning media do, the complicit media do? They focused instead on Monica Lewinsky. They distracted you with Monica Lewinsky because they knew that the average person could easily be distracted by any sex scandal over any real social scandal. Here in San Francisco, in this so-called... I figured, okay, truthfully, I didn't expect to enjoy it. I knew I would likely get agitated, but it was far worse than I thought it would be. In fact, as I was standing here listening to the hysterical voices of the girls from the University of California who took a day off from, what was it, women's studies or puppetry? I have no idea what they were studying. A screaming on a bullhorn, "The San Francisco Police Department is racist," she screamed. I looked at the police. They were Asian, they were black, they were gay, they were lesbian, and there were occasional white male cops mixed in, I must say. The majority of police were white males, but they're still screaming racist cops, racist pigs. Who else was in this so-called rally here in San Francisco? Well, he's just been quoted here in the local paper. Here's one of them with a name. Gaston Lau, L-A-U. A 21-year-old student at the City College of San Francisco said he's rioting because he went to UC Berkeley last year but had to switch to the community college because he couldn't afford UC tuition and fees of $13,000 a year. Well, it's too damn bad. That's what the community college was created for, poor people like you. It was not meant to be an open door to dummies from every high school in the Bay Area, or every dummy in the state should go to a UC school. It was always meant to be for the brightest students. It was not meant for the dummies like you. And let me tell you something else. I went to night school, I went to afternoon school, and then I worked my way up. I didn't cry when I couldn't afford college. I had to run my father's store after he got a heart attack. I didn't go rioting in the street and breaking any windows. So one of the bums comes up to me, didn't know who I was, thank God, because I'm very anonymous when I go out, and my little dog Teddy is with me, my 10-pound poodle, and one of the dirty rabble comes up and gets down and says, "Can I pet your dog?" I said, "Get your filthy hands off my dog." He was shocked. He thought he'd be in solidarity with the man with the dog. He thought I was in sympathy with him because I was there somehow with older clothing and a dog. Somehow I was one of them. I said, "Get your filthy hands off my dog. Don't touch him." It's as though someone threw cold water in his face. This is what's going on out there. You don't know who these people are until you look at their faces. Let me put it to you this way. You wouldn't invite him home for dinner. Let me put it to you another way. You wouldn't want one of them to date your daughter. Let me put it another way. You wouldn't want your son to date one of these girls. Let me put it another way to you. These are very dangerous people. That's all I can tell you. Let's go to some of the callers out there who have been at the New York protests. Fran on WOR, go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Just want to say that I'm a big fan, and so is my entire family.
That's good.
Thank you for accepting my phone call. I just want to let you know that my husband insisted on bringing my three teenagers to Zuccotti Park to see really what's going on. And he really felt that the kids, our kids, were not getting a true picture of what was there from the news.
Yeah.
And I'm a high school teacher myself, and I was very reluctant to go because I was very nervous. But he said, "Let's go, let's go." Well, let
right.
me tell you, these people were not people I wanted my kids associating with. They were just the flotsam and jetsam of society.
That's right. These are the flotsam and jetsam of society, the malcontents that are found in all societies at all time. These are the 0.00001% of losers. There's another word for them, the losers, the bottom fish, the slugs at the bottom of the mud. And we're going to let them tell us how our society should be run?
Children, really, I really believe have a very good moral compass. They were like, "Mom, what is wrong with these people?" They were not unemployed people. They were unemployable people. There's no way you could trust your business with these people. They are unemployable. Whatever gripe they have, they're unemployable.
Every society at every time has a small percentage that's that is known as the malcontents, okay, for want of a better word. It's an interesting category. Now, you take the malcontents and you motivate them. You want to call them rabble and rabble-rousing. You can put it another way. It's been known through history that there's always a rabble. It was the same rabble that conducted the French Revolution. But make no mistake about it. They're highly organized by union money, by the Tides Foundation, by Soros's money, according to my reading. And that's what makes this dangerous. When you have rabble that's this well-funded and this well-organized, this is going to get bigger, not smaller. And now you combine that with a complicit media, a fawning media, rather, and then you combine it with a mayor who's afraid to do anything, a governor who's not there, came to power, Governor Cuomo, as Mr. Law and Order, and so far he's been invisible, like our Governor Jerry Brown, because he doesn't want to show his true colors, which is all on the side of these protesters, or else he would have cracked down on them. Where's the National Guard? What's it for? What is a National Guard for? It's to guard the nation. When you have mobs threatening to close down the nation's financial center, should there not be either police protection or the National Guard to prevent this from happening?
How do we protect our children from this and teach them that this is just a diversion from really seeing what the truth is?
I don't have a distinct answer for you. I mean, it would take an awful lot of movies of revolutions to show what happens when mobs like this get out of hand and how everybody in the society loses. Remember, once a mob is unleashed, nobody is safe. That's the important thing to remember. And it's up to the leaders who don't exist, because fundamentally the lawmakers, unfortunately, have become lawbreakers. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation. Wait, hang on before I go.
Mother's Day is coming up. Now is the time to show all the moms in our lives how much we appreciate them. Our mothers, mothers-in-laws, wives. Now's the time to make them feel special with a beautiful floral bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. Don't settle for less. Send the best. Moms are going to love the rose and lily bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. She'll love this beautiful bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. 1-800-Flowers.com has a very special offer just for my listeners. You order the rose and lily bouquet and you get a free clear vase for only $34.99. That's $25 off the regular price. For this or other Mother's Day offers, go to 1-800-Flowers.com. Click on the radio microphone in the upper right corner and enter Savage, or call 1-800-Flowers and mention my last name, Savage.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Amos, you likened this to the civil rights movement, to Rosa Parks. Do you think that this is...
But by privacy of the officers violating the First Amendment, you violate us, the Internet violates you.
You're listening to the sounds of the drugged-up vermin.
Dakota Officer Junio, J-U-N-I-O.
You're listening to the worst scum of the earth, calling out the names of San Francisco Police Department officers,
C-O-T-A.
Telling the group Anonymous to do what they want with these police officers' identities.
Rate them all for disrespect, ignorance of the First Amendment. And there they go, as soon as they saw that we were reading out their names to be doxxed.
You see, they're taunting the police, and since we do not have a mayor, no one knows who he is, since we have a governor put in by the unions who's invisible right now, he may as well be Moonbeam on the moon, because he's nowhere to be seen when you have such civil disobedience reaching a level where business is being interrupted, the public safety is being affected, public health is being affected, and there's no governor. I'm all in favor of the right to protest. I live by the First Amendment. However, I do not interfere with other people's rights to come to and from work, go to a hospital. I don't interfere with their public health. I don't engage in sexual assault or rape or thievery. I don't use drugs. Do you understand the difference? Do you not understand the difference? Peggy in New York on WOR, go ahead, please.
Michael, First Amendment. Always. You always talk about the First Amendment. You say it in your commercials. Freedom of speech. This is freedom of speech.
Well, what are you hysterical about? You mean you don't know the difference between freedom of speech? Wait, be quiet. You don't know the difference between freedom of speech and sexual assault, thievery, drug use?
New York. York City. No, no. These kids are doing the right thing. Freedom of speech.
These kids? Have you been there? Have you seen that they're not kids?
Excuse me?
What'd you go limp all of a sudden? Your union controller told you what to say and then told you to hang up? What do you mean, these kids? Have you been there and seen them?
I've seen plenty, yes, yes. And
what are you an unemployed vagrant yourself?
No, no.
What exactly do you do for the society at large? Since you're so concerned with social welfare of our society, what do you do for the society?
I did plenty. I worked very hard. And now
you did what? Okay, what did you do? Let's hear what you did.
I worked for 20 years, and now I'm enjoying my retirement. But when I look at television...
Oh, you're enjoying your retirement. How are you enjoying it?
They've had protests.
Are you laying in a tent with one of the youngsters? Is that why you enjoy the young people?
No, I enjoy that they're doing what's good for the country. So let them know, let the government know what's going on.
But you're enjoying your retirement. How come you're not donating your hard-earned cash to those who are engaging in these things?
I give my cash to the veterans, which I'm sorry that nobody talks about the veterans. They talk about this.
Oh, so you think that these vermin in the gutters are now like veterans who fought for our freedom?
No, but I say I give to the veterans, for the disabled veterans.
Well, that's all well and good, but how do you jumble up veterans with the vermin in the gutter?
No, they're not vermin in the gutter at all, no.
Well, why don't you go join them, and why don't you take your retirement and give it to them? Why don't you donate it to them?
No, I did my share.
All right, take a walk, okay? Leave me alone already. I can't... See, this is the problem. You've got gullible, you've got miserable people, gullible people, angry people. This is what is dangerous. I went in front of this crowd and I saw them. I saw who these hardcore rats are. Let me explain to you, these are not kids. And let me tell you something else. I'm a student of history. Do you know who Hitler used in the concentration camps to beat up and to kill and torture his victims? It was the vagrants like this. He got bums like this. He gave them a uniform. He gave them clubs. He gave them guns. He gave them police dogs. And he told them to keep the people in order. They were not ordinary Germans. They were the discontent. They were the malcontents. They were the sadists like this. These mobs are filled with some of the most dangerous people in American society. Make no mistake about it. The reason they're in the streets is because they hate the society. They're malcontents. They're maladjusted. They have never conformed. They never will conform. They'd like to bring down the entire edifice, and we will all suffer as a result. They're not just innocent kids who want justice in this society. If they did, they'd be outside the General Electric building. They'd be rioting outside the GE building saying, pay your fair share of taxes. Or in San Francisco, if these were kids, they'd be outside Feinstein's house saying, how did you invest in a company knowing it would get a $24 million loan? But they're not outside those houses, are they? They have been deflected onto the wrong targets. How do you confuse the First Amendment with taking over a park and using it as a public outhouse? How do you confuse expressing the First Amendment with raping people, robbing people, scamming people into donating money, and then using it to purchase drugs? How do you not understand what is going on here? I watched a TV show that had me so upset I couldn't sleep. I told you I'm a fan of military history. I watch it repeatedly. Last night they had a show on about Nazi collaborators. This is a series they've been running. It's astounding. It's one of the best sequences I've ever seen. Well, last night it was about the Croatian Catholics, the member of the Ustashi, and what they did to Serbs and Jews. You don't know what went on there. I knew a lot about it when Serbia was being mercilessly bombed by Bill Clinton. You didn't know that Bill Clinton and Madeleine Albright committed war crimes when they attacked the Serbs who were defending themselves against the very people who threw their parents into graves while they were alive, stabbed their children to death. You had no idea what was going on then, just as most of you don't have any idea what's going on now. The masses of people in this country are total ignoramuses. And that's why these Occupy groups are getting away with this kind of situation. It's because you don't even understand where they stand with regard to history. Just as you didn't understand that your boy, Bill Clinton, conducted a massive war crime when he unleashed U.S. bombers repainted as NATO bombers on Serbia, which had not been bombed since 1941 by the Nazis, and blew up every bridge on the Danube River, and stop the Serbs from defending themselves against the Nazi descendants who were threatening them again and stole Kosovo from the Serbs, you didn't understand any of it. Instead, you went along with the lockstep liberals who told you he was liberating the concentration camps. The Serbs were defending themselves against the Croatian Nazi movement that had been reignited by the leadership of Croatia after the Balkans started to blow up again. Listen to this.
Mother's Day will be here soon, and Michael Savage made sure Mrs. Savage is getting Sherry's Berries. Sherry's Berries aren't just impressive, they're delicious. And Michael Savage has a special offer from Sherry's Berries just for you. But you must order this week. Don't wait. Send giant dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries starting at just $19.99. That's more than 40% in savings. Sherry's Berries are huge, fresh, and juicy. Just go to berries.com, click on the radio microphone, and type in Savage. And if you order now, Savage Radio listeners can double their berries for just $10 more. Don't be too busy for Mom. Get Sherry's Berries starting at just $19.99. Call 866-FRUIT-02 or visit berries.com. Click on the microphone in the top right corner and click Savage. To order now, offer expires midnight on Friday.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
I think it's wrong to say that I did a high five because you have a picture of a dead body, but understanding the satisfaction for the American people, what it would mean for 9/11 families, what it would mean for the children of folks who died in the Twin Towers who never got to know their parents, I think there was a deep-seated satisfaction for the country. At that moment,
the economy's so bad. How come the restaurants are so full? I don't understand that. If the economy's so bad, how come the restaurants are packed? The roads are full of new cars. People are on vacation already. How does this work? I don't know. What is there, like two societies that I'm living in? I'm going to ask you a question on the Savage Nation. Do you want me to continue reading from the Political Zoo, being sarcastic or satirizing politicians and media figures? Because most of you never heard of the book. Or you want me to do something else? It's open mic to Mike at the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Really, I'll work for you. We'll work for food. We'll work for you. We'll work for food. So to just show you one last one for the moment, I did both sides of the aisle, liberal and conservative, which virtually no one else could say they did back in those days. This is how I established my independent credentials. And in the Political Zoo, the satire of these various figures, I satirized Boxer, Bush, Jimmy Carter, James Carville, Hugo Chavez, Dick Cheney, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, George Clooney, Katie Couric, Maureen Dow, Dianne Feinstein, Newt Gingrich, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Rudy Giuliani. Where is he, by the way? Al Gore, Jesse Jackson, Kim Jong-il, John Kerry, Larry King, Rush Limbaugh, Bill Maher, John McCain, Bill O'Reilly. That's why he never forgave me. It's why I'm banned on Fox News. He has the worst temper in the entire media, according to people who know him. The meanest of all of them is O'Reilly. No humor whatsoever. I mean, they claim liberals have no humor. This guy has never forgiven me for a few things I said about him. All I do is call him a leprechaun. Big deal, Bill. Sheesh, Bill. All I said was lecherous leprechaunus. I mean, what was so bad about that, Bill? Bill O'Reilly was known as top mammal in the Fox News pundit cage, the American porcupine, being a large terrestrial rodent well protected by its prickly exterior. Ooh. And his Latin binomial was Lecheris leprechaunus. When challenged, it erects its quills, swings its stout tail, and threatens to release the barbed tips into challenger's skin. Known for its grunting or groaning delivery, the porcupine is active mainly at night and is found occasionally on televisions in the sagebrush plains of the West. Also, according to legal filings that were settled, the American porcupine will occasionally try to find cable station staff willing to play games like fetch the loofah as part of its bizarre mating ritual. So that's why you never see Michael Savage on, that talk show. They bring up talk shows you never heard of. Never Michael. It doesn't matter anymore. I'm too far advanced in my career for it to matter. So you could see why the O'Reilly factor runs the station. But until then, a word of warning to all you ladies out there in the Savage Nation, I wrote. If you phone O'Reilly's show during porcupine mating season, which lasts from about January to December, do your best to sound like Janet Reno, avoid the subjects of Greek food and cleansing devices, and above all, steer clear of the porcupine's biggest turn-on, namely himself. Oh! A porcupine in heat is a dangerous beast. If he loves you, you'll be able to count the ways. If he loves you, I haven't read this in years. If he loves you, you'll be able to count the ways. In fact, you'll be able to count them by the thousands while you pluck them the morning after. Oh, come on, Bill. Have a sense of humor. Don't be like Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton. Nancy Pelosi was known as, let's see, leftist irrationalis. Nancy Pelosi, leftist irrationalis. With its large beak and small head, the distempered rainbow parakeet. Ooh. The distempered rainbow parakeet caws with great frequency and volume, yet lacks mental capacity to emit anything original or intelligent. Fortunately, the bird has developed an adaptation that helps it to cope with this problem. The beak's large upper mandible is notched for its little bird foot to fit in. Decked with bright blue plumage, the female of the species mates for life, usually with strong and crafty males, capable of building large nests and stashing a surplus of fruits and nuts therein. Not only does this preserve the pair from want, but also frees the female to spend nearly all of its waking hours bobbing through the jungle, screeching at any animals not of its flock, and pretending to care about those that have no nests and food at all. Although its original habitat was Maryland, the breed has since migrated to the San Francisco Bay Area, where it aggressively climbed the political pecking order. Today it can be found both in California and Washington, D.C., chirping away mindlessly in either environ. Curiously, aside from its lower-than-average intelligence, the parakeet suffers from one prominent congenital disability. It is only capable of flapping about in circles, primarily because it is born with only a left wing. Nobody has ever written anything better than this, political satire in our time. Sean Penn, pesky apologista. Native to the left coast, the big-beaked toucan is a colorful and perpetually ill-tempered bird of paradise, born and bred in the protected environs of Hollywood. But unlike most toucans, this one is strangely compelled to migrate to war zones and disaster areas. While adverse to the glare of flashbulbs, hence the bird's notoriety for striking out at photographers, the big-beaked toucan can deftly mimic the dove when in front of television news cameras. This particular breed of toucan gets its name from its decidedly large beak, perfect for tracking down bad scripts and sticking that giant proboscis where it doesn't belong. Not bad. Sean Penn, the toucan tough guy, has a long history of appearances in cinema. It's pretty good. I'm not going to read it all to you. Yes or no? Keep it up or not? What would you like to hear? Oh, come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now.
Savage.
New York WOR. Daniel, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Michael, at the beginning of your show, you asked why people listen to you. Well, I tell you, I've listened to talk radio for years, and I've listened to you for years. You're the only place I can go where you're balanced, you're multifaceted. You give us the truth. And right now, America is in bad, bad shape. And I get inspiration from you. You talk about food. You talk about little Teddy. You're very human. You're ordinary. But then you're extraordinary. You're a man beyond your years. And I just wish and...
Beautiful. You're like a relative. You're like a relative I wish I had.
I mean, it's just incredible what you do. You inspire me. I work 14, 15-hour days. You pick me up at the end of the day, and you keep me going. You inspire me. I start writing my own stuff at night on how I can be a better
really?
Person.
Really? That's interesting. Let me ask you something. I did a diversion in the last segment about these old stories of mine that I found, and I read from one of them. Did you find that distracting, or did you find it was a good part of the show?
Oh, I find... It was refreshing. I still think about when you wrote about Dead Man's Pants, because as a kid, I lived through that. I wore Dead
Man's Pants. Oh, interesting. You know, I told my agent I want to publish all of my unpublished writings in one or two volumes or one big volume, and he said, why? I said, because it will distinguish me from all the other people in the media. None of them have this. They can all, they have what they have, okay? I don't have to knock them, but none of them have this. None of them was a writer for 25 years, and none of them have the range of my interests and my abilities. And I said, that's the only way to distinguish myself. I don't want to do just another this or another that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you're courageous on top of that, where nobody else is courageous. You don't worry about anything. You just forge ahead with your own.
Well, I am. You see, this is not true. I do worry about it. I worry greatly about the evils of people in the government and what they might do to me. I do. But there's nothing I can do about it. Talk radio is not only not dead, but talk radio is very much alive. Although the midstream media has been claiming for years now that talk radio is dead, that the empty skirts who have been saying that this is a medium only for fringe extremists or old men, that talk radio is only for old men, I've proven them all wrong. Talk Radio Network and Michael Savage are partners. We've been in business together since when, 2000? Now, we all hear that the Internet is the king, and a lot of people ran to the Internet with their advertising money. Yet everyone knows that no one's been able to monetize their investment in the Internet. Nobody. You see, talk radio is a medium that you can't hide yourself easily in. You can't hide behind a mustache and such. 3 hours a day, Jerry. 3 hours a day, Jerry. Mr. Mustache on Fox. And unless you have a massive production staff who is talking for you, you're not going to get very far, right? But I don't have a massive staff. I have a very small and very good staff. And when you do talk radio right, people get to know you, people get to understand that you're a real person, and they relate to you. What I'm saying is I've proven that talk radio is a very vibrant medium today. People who listen to talk radio are more acutely aware of what's going on than the average American. Although the fraudulent elites, or shall I say the self-proclaimed drug addicts with microphones and cameras in front of their faces, laugh at you, the average listener to talk radio is far more knowledgeable politically than they would like you to believe. And by the way, listeners to talk radio vote both with their wallets and their ballots.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Many topics. Here's a new one. Women in combat policy. The liberals and the feminists have convinced the Obama administration, which has decimated the military, destroyed NASA, given China a clear lead in space, is now proposing to change the current policy, which restricts women from combat roles. It's not bad enough what they've done thus far to the military. They now want for all ground combat jobs to be open to women. Well, can we recommend some women to go into such units? I mean, can we the people say, good, go, girl, go? Do you have any idea what this means? Why is it dangerous for the entire unit for women to serve in combat? Let's put it to you that way. I'd like some men who've actually been in combat, frontline combat, to tell us what you think. I'm not a military man, but I have common sense and I study things. I think it's absurd, crazy, insane to put women into ground combat jobs. Women make great pilots. They made phenomenal helicopter pilots, etc. I'm sure they're fabulous officers on ships. But in frontline combat units, they will put the entire patrol at risk, would be my estimation. 1-800-449-8255 on the issue of women in combat, yes or no. Marcus, New York, WOR. Fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi. I got 29 months in Iraq, and the idea of women in combat is a joke. And I'll tell you why.
Okay. I want to hear why. Tell me why, if a woman's willing to risk her life, she shouldn't be able to go out on patrol. Why?
Well, besides the rigors of combat is one, like a woman can't really go 40 days without a shower. But the main point is this. Let's say a male soldier goes out on patrol and gets shot in the chest, and a woman happens to be injured as well in the arm. Another male soldier will instinctively go and help the woman before he helps the male, simply because it's a woman, instead of helping the male who has a life-threatening injury.
The chivalry will kick in. And although she has a lesser injury, he'll go to help her. What about this? A male in the combat unit is injured. Could she carry him off the battlefield? Answer no.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I've been on 35-mile ruck marches with 75-pound packs on my back. There is no way the average woman could ever be able to handle that.
Well, that's the thing. Then they'll change the rules and say it's too tough for them and it's not fair and that it's bullying. If they can't complete the course, change it to a two-minute walk with a feather on your back. That's the next thing. It's going to weaken the military as sure as I'm standing here. That's it. Plain English. It's common sense. But that doesn't stop the head of the Defense Department, the Pentagon, to push this feminist claptrap on the combat units. It's frightening to see this.
They turned the military into a social experiment. They did it with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and God knows if they do it with women in combat. But
Marcus, I want to ask you about the Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They change it to open homosexuality. Has that affected the military from your point of view, really?
Absolutely. I'm a tank commander from 4th Infantry Division. It has absolutely affected it. There's very few combat soldiers that were in favor of it, not because they're prejudiced against it. It's all about morale. It's all about cohesion. And we shower together in combat. We shower together in the field, and we sleep together, and it's tight-knit. To know that someone is a homosexual in the group wouldn't necessarily cause anger or anything, but it would be a distraction, and no one would want to be around it, and it's just not a place for it.
So how is a woman going to shower in combat? Let's go to that next level. What is she going to do? She needs a separate shower? All the men are showering, and she needs a separate shower now? So then they have to carry extra water and an extra tarp to shield her from the men's eyes? Is that what they have in mind in the Pentagon?
It's funny you mention that, because when I was in Mosul, we had a combat cameraman. She was a female. She followed us around and took pictures of us and documented us. And we actually had to do that very thing. We had to build her own shower, give her own little bathroom all by herself, and give her all the special treatment simply because she was a female.
Insanity. And they're putting women on submarines, which have limited space. And what are they going to do, take out one torpedo tube and turn it into a beauty parlor?
I don't know. That's a good question.
No, I mean, that's the thinking. That would be Panetta's thinking, that they would sacrifice one missile silo for a personal beauty parlor for women on submarines, because what's important is that the women feel comfortable.
Right.
How does the world look to you when you go off duty and you're walking in the streets, I would assume, in Manhattan? Is that correct?
No, I'm down in Brooklyn, doctor.
All right, fine. You're in the streets of Brooklyn after work. What do the streets look like to a man who's been in life and death combat is what I'm getting at.
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, there's so much trash piled in Brooklyn. It doesn't look that much different from Mosul.
Oh, God. Well, you can thank Mayor Bloomberg and the unions for that. But do you sense danger in the streets, or do you feel safe in the streets?
Honestly, I'm pretty supported around here. Like, you got the gangbangers running around and stuff, but for the most part, people respect me, and they respect my rank, and they respect my position, and I get things, people buy me lunch occasionally, but for the most part...
Oh, you mean when you're in uniform? Of course the American people respect you and want to give you support. That's the beauty of America.
Wait, hang on. Before I go, how much money do you need to earn each month? Huh? That's what IncomeAtHome.com wants to know. They'll help you make that happen. IncomeAtHome.com is America's leading work-from-home business. They have an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. They're affiliated with a multi-billion dollar company. Plus, they do business in over 80 countries. The bottom line is this. They are legit. Your age, education, experience, it doesn't matter. You can do this. You can literally earn money on your computer from your kitchen table 24/7. Even while you sleep, there's no pressure. All you need is a little spare time and their one-on-one coaching to earn great money from home. Hey, look, if you're sick of living paycheck to paycheck, if you're worried about job security or retirement, if you're ready to make great money from home, part-time or full, IncomeAtHome.com is adding my listeners in record numbers. They're even giving away $1,000 to someone, you hear that? Just for checking them out. So check them out. Visit IncomeAtHome.com.
Savage.
Cincinnati, Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thanks very much. It's always a pleasure listening to your show. You got such a great amount of wisdom. Hey, I've got a three-year-old daughter that is real intelligent, and I'm just curious if you have some ideas and things I could do to help her, you know, expand her knowledge and to learn and grow faster.
Very interesting. Now, you know she's brighter than her peers through what, just simply through your own observations or through school? The school told you?
She's only 3 years old, so she's not going to daycare or school. But I've got quite a few girls that have come in to watch her. We've got sitters that watch her all day long when we're at work. And, you know, a
so
lot
she's
of...
she's very intelligent. She's highly precocious. And you have to understand that when she goes to school, there are many programs for the dumb. There are many programs for the juvenile delinquent. There are many programs for every type of child except for the bright. You know that in our society. They cater to the dumbest, not to the brightest. I hope you understand that.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but you're right.
It's unfortunate, right. When I went to school, they had special programs for bright kids to make sure America kept advancing. Now, because we have a backwards view of the universe, they spend all their money on the stupid rather than on the brightest. Troublemakers, they get special attention. You name it. So you as a parent are calling because you already know what to do. I mean, you're reading to her, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I would think that reading, make believe you're the tutor. So what are you not doing with her that you should be? Do you take her to art museums?
No, we haven't done that lately, but that is something I definitely want to be doing. I've been working.
All right. I would definitely open up her mind to great art. I would take it to the museums. In Cincinnati must have some classical art in one of the museums, I would assume. I'm not familiar with the museums there, but every city, especially a city of that size, would have a decent collection of fine art, correct?
Sure, definitely.
All right, so I would go there. I would think a three-year-old is not going to need a docent to explain what the painting is, but you can show her through the form and the shape and the color what a great painting is as opposed to, you don't want to compare. She wouldn't understand a comparison. Why don't you just expose it to some great masters to start with?
Yeah, that's a great idea. What are some
All right,
things?
So that would be one thing. Then music is very important. Do you have music playing in the house at any time?
Yeah, quite often each day.
What kind of music?
We listen to Christian music and children's music. She enjoys mainly the children's music right now. But
very beautiful. I would expose her to some great classical music, which has been shown to absolutely expand the consciousness of children. Sir, I don't have to tell you with the other side of it what it does to the brains. All you got to do is look at Lindsay Lohan to see where that ends up. That really works out real well to expose a child to that kind of garbage. But I would play... get CDs of some of the, you know, greats, get Bach, get, I don't think that Beethoven is something a three-year-old can really relate to, truthfully. It may be too heroic for a child to listen to, especially some of his great symphonies. But I would get Chopin and see what she reacts to and try to see if she has any musical talent.
Yeah, we actually just started giving her piano lessons about a month ago. So
now, what about mathematics? There must be some way to increase her mathematical skills. This is an area I don't know anything about in terms of advice, and I would suggest that I go to an expert. I go to the internet, frankly. You know, there's a way. The search engines today are so good that if you know what to look for, you can get the answer. Just put in the correct words. So in this case, I would do a search, whether it's the Google or any other search engine, and say mathematical lessons for the three-year-old. Okay? See what comes up.
Okay.
See what comes up. It's amazing what might come flying up off the internet.
Yeah. Can I ask you, what were some of the things that you did with your kids that you found really helpful?
Oh, well, see, that's another story. I did almost everything I just told you. I was a big museum goer. I took them to museums. I did not make a big deal out of school other than they had to go to school and they had to do their homework. I never got mad at them if they didn't get an A or something like that. I also took my children I took them out of school in the middle of the year on ocean trips when I was a lecturer at sea, on the understanding that they would do their schoolwork on the ship with me as the tutor. Of course, that didn't always work out. They usually were more interested in running around on the ship and looking at the ocean. But I had felt that the exposure to countries such as Fiji and the people in the islands would do more, for example, for my son than just simply sitting in a classroom, and it sure worked out for him. He's a person who knows how to get along with people all over the world, and I would have to say that the exposure to people of the world helped him with that. So it's not just going to be through school books. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure. Hey, I really appreciate your advice, and like I said, you're one of the wisest people I've ever heard talk, and it's just a blast listening to you.
That's beautiful. Let me send you a gift. I'm going to send you a free copy of Healing Children Naturally if you'll give us your email, because I think diet is something so important, especially for young children, and it's often overlooked. This is the Savage Nation. If you have a life coach question for Coach Savage, you know the number, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Goodness, there's so many questions, and I don't know where to go. It's going to interest you. Let's say you're sitting in a car, and you're somewhere in Brooklyn, New York, and you're driving past the chair that Anthony Weiner just sat in, and you're listening to Anthony Weiner just got up from a chair in a cafe. Oh, goodness. Sacramento, KSTE country. Eric, what's on your mind, Eric? What's on your mind?
Yeah, I had a question. If you think I should continue to pursue getting back together with my ex, or should I just let it go? That's one question. The second one was, we have a child together, a five-year-old son. Should I continue to try and include her in activities that we do together as a family?
I'm missing something. Include the child from the former marriage? You have a new marriage? Is that what you're saying?
No. I had a girlfriend that we were living together, and we had a child together, and then she kicked me out. And so we had kind of a pseudo-marriage. You know, we're trying
to
play house.
Right, and I get it. That happens. There's no shame in that. And then, so what's the problem right now?
Well, she didn't want to. She broke up with me about 6 or 7 months ago, and so I moved out. And so we've been, you know, swapping them back and forth. And every now and then, when I see her, we're able to, you know, hang out, the three of us. And
yeah.
You know, good times, just like it always was. And I say, hey, you know, why don't we get back? You know, I try and say, hey.
All right. So what are you asking? Because you're saying, should you get back with her? The question is, will she get back with you? Washington State, Lyle, you're on the Savage Nation topic question, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. So I'm a 22-year-old college student, and I'm going to be finishing up my undergrad in exercise science here this winter.
Yep.
And kind of my plan for the last 2 years or so was to go to grad school for occupational therapy. And basically, I just started reading Think and Grow Rich, and it kind of gave me a different perspective on life and how to pursue what I want to do and, you know, make a living. And
is the actual question? You're not sure you want to go into occupational therapy? You want to do something to make where you can make more money, in essence?
Yeah.
All right, so what's the question to me? You've already made up your mind about what you want to do, so what are you actually asking me?
Well, I know you're a big advocate on the staying in school and just with times and how hard it is.
Well, I'm not so sure I'm a big advocate of it anymore. I don't know what's waiting for you when you get out. What is it that you envision doing to make your fortune? Let's be clear. You want to make a fortune, correct? And that's perfectly fine. Don't be ashamed of it. People are going to have to hide it. They want to become rich. Why hide it? So you want to take your education and move on to some level where you have a path to make some money, correct?
Correct.
All right, so what are you thinking of doing?
Well, like I said, I'll have my undergrad in exercise science. and I'm thinking get my personal trainer degree and do that for just a couple years.
Well, hold on now. How many personal trainers really make a good living in this country today in a down economy? How many people still have the money to hire someone to come over and teach them how to do push-ups?
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
You know what? I'm going to open it up to anything. Give me some rock and roll. Let's do. Do you have The Great Pretender by The Platters? I heard it the other night. I really loved it over the weekend. I was in a very sad, depressed mood. I was alone. I go into these moods in and out. I admit it. I'm not ashamed of it. You know, it gets back to something. You got it. Look at that. Bouncing Prozac pill. Follow it along the bottom of the radio speaker, the bouncing Prozac pill.
I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Great song, actually, to be honest with you. Anyway, turn it on. It's my own thing. But so I'm getting into one of those moods, and I decide to have a couple of drinks by myself, which I did. And I had a couple of drinks, and the mood went away. But the thing I'm telling you is that life sucks. And once you accept that life sucks, it becomes easier to deal with. And that's why there's so much weakness in America, is because we're deluded into thinking that we're supposed to be happy and everyone else is happy and you're the only one who's feeling lonely. Or you're feeling life's burdens and no one else, and you look at the ads every minute, there's a ha-ha and a ho-ho and a hee-hee and it. And the media continuously drives this concept that everyone else is having a great time except you. You're the only one having a miserable time. But in fact, this is what life is. And a lot of it is the fact that you were raised, if you're a person under 45, you were probably raised in a Spockian, nightmare where you were told that life is pleasant, life is easy, life is good, and maybe it is for you. Maybe you're a lucky person. You'd be the exception. You're not the norm. For most people, life is a grind, life is a bore, and life is difficult, and life sucks. And there is no happiness. Happiness is fleeting. Happiness is transient. Happiness exists here and there. You have moments of happiness, whatever they may be for you. I don't know what they are. The birth of a child, the wedding of your daughter, I don't know what the hell, walking your child, seeing the kid in the graduation hat, whatever it is, I don't know, getting a promotion, seeing a book published, there are small moments, but basically it's a flat line of difficulty for the average person. Then you get sick and you suffer, and then you die a horrible death, usually alone in a home or in a hospital. And once you accept that that's the terms, that's the deal, that's it. It isn't that bad when you realize what people have suffered through the ages. So what you have to do is toughen yourself up, and you have to learn that life is not the delusion that if only there was another elected official out there who gave you free medical care, if he gave you prescription drugs, you'd be happy if you had prescription drugs. If only you had more prescription drugs, more crutches from the government, then you'd be happy. And you got to pray a lot. I mean, you got to go back to the holy books that your fathers or grandfathers, you're only probably, no matter who you are, let's say your hair is green and you got 18 nose rings and nipple rings and this ring and that ring, and you're running around in L.A. twinkling around thinking you're free, you're free, you're free. I don't hear freedom. I hear slavery. The more I hear those rings rattle, the more I know you're a slave. You're probably only two generations at most away from a very religious person in your family. Max two generations, the most. Someone who actually believed in the word of God and went to church or synagogue. And you may find that, is the way to go. What I found is that there's no single way to go in my own case. It doesn't work for you. It works for me. You got to do an awful lot of different things. Exercise, vitamins, eat right, know how to control yourself, know where to get your pleasure, know where not to get your pleasure. You got to pray. You got to believe in God. Everything is part of the whole. There's no single path. for the modern man. There's no simple solution for it all. In other words, you just got to deal with life's burdens. Or else, what are you going to do? What, are you going to kill yourself? So, it is related to politics, what I'm saying to you. We're living in a delusional nation. Everything is fantasy. We all watch too much TV, too many movies. I myself do. I admit it. I don't know how much of what how many movies I've watched. If I could redo one thing in my life, I would never have watched movies or television in my life. I can't imagine life without it. I've been brainwashed since I'm a child. Remember, I'm born in the television age. Would you believe I go back to a time before there was television? Can you believe that? That's amazing. But I remember living in a time when there was no television in a house. There was only a radio. And we would sit around and listen to the radio. I'd lie on my father's lap. He'd smoke Philip Morris, God rest his soul. And we'd listen to shows like The Green Hornet and whatever. And you had to use your imagination. When you listen to radio as a child, this is why I'm so talented in radio. Because I grew up on radio. Don't you understand there's a difference? It's not that there are people who are younger than me who can't do radio, but my father used to explain to me that radio was actually a better medium. He used to say to me, I like radio better. I said, why, Dad? Because you have to. He used to say to me, because you have to use your imagination. I said, oh, okay. So he taught me how to use my imagination. Not that it was too hard for me to do so. There was so much tragedy in my youth that I learned to live in a fantasy world. I created my own fantasy world in order to overcome the tragedy of my childhood. But that's good. That is good. That's what creative people do. They create with their sadness. They create with their misery. They don't succumb to a drug. Don't you understand that? That when you suppress sadness, when you suppress loneliness, when you keep suppressing these things with drugs, you're killing yourself. It's a small death. It's a petite mort. You know what I'm saying? Le petite mort. But it's not even the pleasure of the petite mort. Play the Green Hornet for the audience. They don't know what I'm talking about.
He hunts the biggest of all games. Public enemies who try to destroy our America.
I turn it off. This is horrible. Bad radio. What is this now? 1-800-449. Jesse Jackson warns of harm to parties. Look who's talking. A real halo. Jesse Jackson warns of irreparable harm to party. Here's a guy who wrecked the Democrat Party with his racial divide and hatred and his bunko, him and the other one. Him and the other one with the white collar. No one knows where he went to divinity school. Jesse High Jackson. The Democrats. He's advising them how to run the party now. Oh, great. 1-800-419-8255. MichaelSavage.com. What do you want to talk about? Many of you don't know how to raise children. But you need me to tell you. You do. Many of you don't have a parent. You don't have a father. You don't have an uncle. You have no one to rely upon. And you don't know what to do. You don't know how to turn. And I'm telling you that this coddling stuff, I'm not saying hit your kid. Don't get me wrong. I'm not giving you that advice. But you got to teach your child reality. And you got to teach your child that life is not a bowl of cherries. You got to teach them that life needs to be hard, that life is hard. Life is going to leave you alone a lot. You got to teach your child to be alone a lot. Did you know that? You know, you got to teach your child how to be alone a lot in order to be alone a lot, because he's going to be alone a lot when he grows up. Did you hear what I just said? We don't live in a commune. He's not going to live in Ding Dong School the rest of his life. Teach your child how to be alone. I remember when my first child was a baby. I didn't know how to raise an infant, so I turned to various cultures for advice. I mean, I was an anthropologist at the time, and I was immersing myself in Native American, everything I could read on tribal lore. I read South Pacific, this and that. But one of the things I read was how the Native Americans, some of the tribes, raised their young sons to be tough, basically. And when the young baby, if it was a boy baby, started to cry, they'd wrap the baby in a papoose and then put the papoose out on a tree outside the teepee until the baby screamed and cried till he didn't scream anymore. I read that. Now, of course, today the Child Protective Service is the ones that will not go to the home of a talk show host who imagined doing his own daughter and his son's friends, allegedly. The same CPS run by the hippopotamuses in Child Protective Services, the mean-faced, clipped-haired hippos who run these agencies, would, of course, arrest the Native American who did that today. But it was a pretty good idea. In other words, a child will cry and cry and cry till there's no crying left. And guess what? Then the child becomes hardened. He's harder as a result. Oh, he doesn't feel as much as you want him to feel? Oh, he doesn't know. He doesn't feel like you want him to. You want him to be a feeling man? You want him to be a metrosexual son? Maybe you don't want him to be a metrosexual son. Maybe if you raised your son a little bit more like that, and then you watched a few shows on the Spetsnaz training for the Russian Special Forces and see how tough these guys are compared to even our toughest of tough. In other words, what they do in the Special Forces in Russia to train their men, you couldn't do here in America. They consider what the Russian Special Forces do to each other makes waterboarding look like a picnic on Sunday. But don't tell that to Obama. What they do to each other in training, they punch each other in the nose. There are no teeth guards. There are no nose guards. They beat each other up. And if the guy can't handle it, they throw him out of the Russian Special Forces. Here, right away, Obama would break down the Marine training or the Special Forces training, saying it's a little too rough, okay? That's where I'm concerned about my country.
Wait, hang on. Before I go, back in September, we all paused to remember the 9/11 attacks. That one day changed the very way we all live and think. In fact, the Red Cross now recommends that we have a surplus of food in case of disaster, weather, or power outages. That's why I recommend and personally use WiseFoodStorage.com. WiseFoodStorage.com provides affordable and complete delicious ready-made meals for emergencies or even camping. I know more about food than anybody in radio. I have a PhD from the University of California in nutrition. These foods are nutritionally sound for good health. Visit WiseFoodStorage.com. Get a free entree sample by entering the promo code SAVAGE, and then you'll get free shipping on any order. SAVAGE. WiseFoodStorage.com or call 855-FOODWISE, and be sure to mention SAVAGE for a free sample and free shipping on any order.
SAVAGE.
People are yakking about, which is the faith of Mr. Romney that he's a Mormon. I don't understand why they're so concerned. You know, I think a person's faith is their own business. I'm very uncomfortable with them grilling him on it. I know what this is, where this is coming from. It's coming from atheists who don't have any faith whatsoever, and they're trying to make the issue of faith an issue. Well, I think it's a very dangerous precedent, number one. Number two, what do you care what a person's faith is? Why is it your business? Why is this so important? I have never met a Mormon I didn't like. Never. And you say, well, you never met a Mormon. That's not true. In the early years, when I was a consultant, I was a consultant in the vitamin and herbal business. I traveled to Salt Lake City on a regular basis. I worked with Mormon people who were large. They were dominant in the herbal business back when I did it. They were some of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. They, you know, we'd go to dinner. They didn't drink, so they didn't drink. I had a beer. They didn't have a beer. So what? Other than that, I didn't ask them what their view of heaven was. They didn't ask me what my view of heaven was. I didn't ask them what their view of the other place was. And they didn't ask me what my view of the other place was. To me, that's a matter of personal faith. It's the faith of their fathers. Why don't you respect it? You know, we had a guy named Jimmy Carter. For God's sakes, this guy, I think his family shook snakes and they drank arsenic. Did that bother you that one of them said he met his particular lord in the living room? I didn't ask whether he was wearing a white sheet or a green sheet. It didn't bother me. He was just a rotten president, a weakling, and a quasi-socialist. But that's what really bothered me was were his politics, not his religion. Do you want to talk about Mormonism? Do you think that's an appropriate topic? I don't. As a matter of fact, I told you the last time I was in Vegas at the fight, I was sitting like the third row back, and behind me, a little bit above me, was Harry Reid, and I noticed him. And I went up to him during one of the breaks, and I said, hello, Mr. Reid. Senator Reid, my name is Michael Savage, and I saw he didn't snap. I said, I'm the radio guy. He said, yes, of course. He was very polite. And I don't know how it got to it. Something about children immediately. This was within 1 minute. I said, I'm here with my son. He said, oh, very nice. How many children do you have? I said, two. And I said, how many children do you have? He said, five. I said, are you of the Mormon faith? And I saw then he got a little, you know, defensive in his face. He said, yes, I am. I said, it's a great faith, and I've met many Mormon people I like. And that's all it was. I think I said, I really don't know what people are so upset about with Mormonism right now. I said it to him months ago. I said, I don't really care what a person's view of heaven is. Now, why are people afraid of Mormons? Does anyone understand this? I don't understand it. John, Kansas City, go ahead, please.
I think the trouble is that a lot of people don't understand the history of Mormonism, and that one of the prophecies that Joseph Smith and some of their early prophets stated was that America would be run by Mormons, and that the country would be holding on by a thread, and the Constitution would snap, so to speak, and Mormons would save the day, and that this would become a theocratic state run by Mormons. And I think that, you know, maybe a lot of people don't realize that, but that's part of the doctrine that a Mormon's not going to tell you the first time they meet you once they indoctrinate.
So in other words, the liberals are more afraid of radical Mormonism than they are of radical Islam.
Well, that might be true, but that's
The radicals are afraid of not Islamism, but Mormonism? It's crazy to me. They're more terrified of poor Romney? Mitt Romney's father was the governor of Michigan, wasn't he?
I have no idea.
See? No one knows. Yes, he was the governor of Michigan. Hello? So far as I remember, Mitt Romney's father was the governor of Michigan. Correct me if I'm mistaken. I like Romney so far. I know he's, you know, a politician. He's been all over the map on various issues. But let me tell you something. If it's a choice between a Christian like Romney, or Romney who was a Christian of the Mormon variety, and the quasi-Bolshevik Hillary Clinton, and the questionable Barack Obama Indonesia Muslim father, but I'm really a Catholic, something tells me I'll take Romney. I'll put the hands of the nation in Romney's hand first. But again, I really would rather not even know about this. These are things I'd rather not know about. And I'm embarrassed that we're talking about this, you know. Waco, Texas. What a great place to call from. George, go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. I'm just calling. I think I agree with that last guy. The media is just trying to bring him down because I myself am an agnostic. I'm not very religious. But to me, Mitt Romney is like the best candidate out there. I've seen him on television. I've seen him on some of the debates.
I'll tell you why I think Romney's going to win. I have analyzed the last six presidential elections, and I've said for years, whoever has more hair wins. Now, there's a caveat in that. He has more hair than anyone on the male side. I mean, we may as well be talking about their hairstyles as much as their religion. I don't see this as a biggie, truthfully. Can you please leave the poor Mormons alone? They're nice people. What has a Mormon ever done to hurt you? Can anyone explain to me what Mormons, why they scare you? What is wrong with you people? What is it about Mormons that scare the average person? Gavin, go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Listen, what that guy said is a flat-out lie. There's nowhere in the Mormon doctrine that says that one day some guy is going to come in and save the country, and it's going to be a Mormon. I've been a Mormon. I've been practicing Mormon for 27 years. I went on a mission to Peru. I know the doctrine. Nowhere does
right.
it say that.
They're great people. They're missionaries. They're wonderful people. Is it true that all Mormons don't drink? I mean, is that part of the religion?
Well, it's one of the things that we promote for our health.
All right, so there's nothing wrong with that.
Savage.
Talk radio is still dominant in terms of the world of political ideas in this country. I did it on this show. It was done nowhere else. We kept hearing talk radio is this, talk radio is that. It's only for old people. Talk radio is dead. Cable news is king. Internet is king. I don't say they don't have a powerful influence. You got to be a fool not to say so. At this stage, though, you'd have to admit, no matter how much of a doubting Thomas you are, that Michael Savage has rescued talk radio from the gallows, Talk Radio Network, an independent syndicator. I work with the best team in talk radio. They know me. They're like my friends, all the guys in the back room. It's unbelievable to me. This is a family. This is a team. We are the Yankees of talk radio. If anyone out there has been doubting whether talk radio still is powerful, let me tell you something. It is more powerful today than it ever has been in my 16-year career. Much more powerful today. More listeners than ever. More influence than ever. That's if you're in a ring. If you're in the inner ring, you have an audience that needs you and listens to you. And if you make sense, well, you're gonna make a lot of friends and a lot of unhappy people. Use the word enemies because we don't yet live in North Korea.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
History last night about the fall of Rome. And in the reading of the fall of Rome, I know it's off the topic, I read about the Huns and how the Huns under Attila would invade a city and, you know, destroy the city and leave it depopulated. Now, I don't want to jump to some stupid conclusion here and to say that we have been invaded by the Huns here in the United States of America, but if you were to draw an analogy in a brief sentence or two, how would you describe the economically unproductive citizens that are running the United States of America at the federal level? They are the economically unproductive elements of society, by the way. Aristocrats, civil servants, and churchmen, by the way, were considered the economically unproductive citizens of the late Empire of Rome. The aristocrats, civil servants, and churchmen. Idleness, in other words, they don't really produce anything. Do the aristocrats of America, who would be who? Who are the aristocrats of America? Inherited wealth. They basically produce nothing. Civil servants produce nothing, by and large, except the police, perhaps. The police are out on the front lines. Don't confuse everyone who has a bunch of badges on their chest with a hero. Some of them sit behind a desk all their lives, and they get a badge for sitting at a desk. So how would you define them? I mean, my definition of the Obama administration is a little different than most of the time. Now it's well accepted by those who have an intelligent knowledge of history that we have a communist in the White House. Say, oh, that can't be. It hasn't been written about in the New York Times. Or he could not be a Marxist because they said it's not true on CNN. So what if he is a Marxist? Why doesn't he just come out and say he proudly represents the Marxist wing of the Democrat Party? Why would that be so hard? Because nobody would elect them again. They'd say, oh, that's not good. They don't know what Marxism is, but they know it's bad. And they can't make the jokes about the community. Everyone knows it means communist and revolution and, you know, oppression of people. That's basically what they think. But how different is, let's say you're on the Obama side. How do you define a man who refuses to cut back on spending and instead wants to attack the middle class with increased taxation? How else would you define him? His target is the middle class over and over again, the middle class. I don't care. You can define the middle class any way you want, but when you, every time you say the rich and it hits the middle class after he flies back from meeting with the super rich who give him the money to get reelected, what does that tell you? It tells you that it's all a fraud. Let's go to the callers instead. I don't think anyone cares about any of this. Honestly, I don't think anyone cares. I don't think they care that Corzine's company is short $1.2 billion. So what? So what? Big deal. What are you making a big deal of it? So what that he was a Democrat governor in New Jersey and he screwed everybody in New Jersey? So what? What are you going to do about it? That's not a real crime. Look what Bush did. $1.2 billion. That's nothing compared to the Iraq War. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. So what if the DHS had nothing to do with any cases to do with Occupy taking over Oakland or illegal aliens or won't protect our border?
Savage.
So where do all the billions go? They disappear, but do they actually disappear? Where do they go? Well, I'll explain a little something to you right now. There was a company called Golden West Financial Corporation. Then there was World Savings Bank. At a certain point, Herbert Sandler and his wife Marion Sandler, and I believe Marion's brother, Bernie Osher, all big liberals in the Bay Area, big supporters of Feinstein, big supporters of Boxer, big donors to groups such as the ACLU, I believe. They made a fortune when they sold their bank to Wachovia for $24 billion. Unfortunately for the taxpayer, after the bank was sold, which consisted largely of mortgages that were worthless, there was nothing there. The acquisition was completed in October of 2006, and it was a major factor in the fall of Wachovia Bank. The Sandlers owned about 10% of the company at the time of the sale, and their share of the sale price was about $2.4 billion. Of this, the Sandlers gave $1.3 billion to their own foundation, the Sandler Foundation. Sounds good, right? Where did the money go? Well, it went to the Center for American Progress, a far-left progressive so-called think tank, ProPublica, a radical leftist smear group, only left-wing reporting permitted, the ACLU, and other groups like it. Now, you have to ask yourself, why would billionaires who were in savings and loan or banking businesses, why would they give money to leftist groups like the Center for American Progress, ProPublica, or the ACLU, or even the National Lawyers Guild? Why would they give them money? Because this way they make sure they're never attacked by the mobs in the gutters of America. This way they get to go to have a lunch somewhere with these organizations, and they tell them, you know, that Bank of America is a bad place. You know, that's a good place for your useful idiots to go into the streets and riot. You get those hysterical girls from Berkeley stoned up on, worked up on dope. Let them go there and screech outside the B of A. Meanwhile, by the way, we'll be in St. Bart's next month. Would you like to come down, Mr. ACLU? Don't you understand what this is? All of what's going on in America now has been organized. It's not spontaneous. The money has been traced. It started with one of the most distinguished people on earth, one of the finest hedge fund operators the world has ever seen, George Soros. He funded a lot of this. Not directly, of course. He had buffers. And the buffers would include groups such as the Tides Foundation. But then the Tides Foundation has buffers. And at the end of the day, we the people have to face the rabble in the gutters. Now, the rabble, it is true, are a threat to the public safety and the public health. Tuberculosis in Atlanta, scabies and ringworm in New York. This is how epidemics spread. I'm a trained epidemiologist. How do you think epidemics spread? It starts with very intense housing without hygiene, without sanitation, no running water, no toilet facilities. People sleep closely together. Venereal diseases spread. Other diseases are cultivated. And then it could spread into the general population. So you'd say, well, a mayor should step in. A mayor who is supposed to protect the public order, public health, public safety, even if you don't agree with me, you have to agree that a microbe does not discriminate. Even if you're the biggest ILGWU phony living in New York, walking around with your head held high, still outraged at the rich Republican, even you could be affected by a microbe from the Occupy Wall Street. You may not know it, but you see, a louse respects no boundaries. You may be the best Democrat in the world. You may be such a good socialist, but that louse has no knowledge that you're a good Democrat. And if it gets underneath the cuff of your pants, as you're marching around with your big mouth about bring it all down, you too could wind up with a disease. You don't even understand that your public health and your public safety right now is being threatened because your mayor is not doing his job, your governor is out to lunch, and that is why these things are happening. Because without order, there could be no civility. And so I go back to my point. Yes, there's plenty of blame to go around. It's not Bank of America robbing America today. Take a look at what just came out. It's the Kennedy Organization got $1.4 billion. The other day we found out Feinstein traded in stock after making sure it got a $24 million grant. 2 weeks before, it was Pelosi. Then it was a Republican with a ranch. Don't you understand what's going on here? I mean, thank God 60 Minutes was able to release that. I know it was held for well over a week, and it was held because of political pressure from the Democrats who were named, who brought pressure to bear upon the CBS board of directors, I'm sure. But apparently they could not crack Stephen Croft,
Apparently, he's been there long enough to be able to be have the semblance of journalism come out on the air, and he should be lauded for it. He is the only member of the mainstream media who has done anything of any value in the last 10 years. All the rest is simply throwing stardust in our eyes. Now you say, well, why are you saying so much about Sandusky? Or if they're involved. But to me, well, the nation is even more horrible. Yes, Lady Liberty has been raped at the same time, and yet we're not hearing much about the rape of Lady Liberty. Wait, hang on before I go.
Mother's Day is coming up. Now is the time to show all the moms in our lives how much we appreciate them. Our mothers, mothers-in-laws, wives. Now's the time to make them feel special with a beautiful floral bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. Don't settle for less. Send the best. Moms are going to love the rose and lily bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. She'll love this beautiful bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. 1-800-Flowers.com has a very special offer just for my listeners. You order the rose and lily bouquet and you get a free clear vase for only $34.99. That's $25 off the regular price. For this or other Mother's Day offers, go to 1-800-Flowers.com. Click on the radio microphone in the upper right corner and enter Savage. Or call 1-800-Flowers and mention my last name, Savage.
Savage.
I'm going to lighten things up a little bit because it gets too hot. We got to slow her down. We'll come back to very strong politics in a minute. Many people would like me to read from Abuse of Power, Tel Aviv, Israel, way into the book in the middle of it. Welcome to the city that never sleeps, the Reb said as they exited the highway. Traffic was light on the new express lane into Tel Aviv, and the drive-in from Ben-Gurion International Airport had taken them only 20 minutes. Rabbi Mel Nirsham had come in from San Francisco on an earlier flight to make the appropriate arrangements for Jack's arrival. Jack had known Nirsham for many years now. They'd met through a mutual acquaintance, Bill Hicks, a private detective. Hicks and Hatfield frequented the same restaurant, a place on Columbus, the North Beach restaurant, where they both liked to eat at the bar as they watched the crowd coming and going while they talked what they called the unholy trinity, sports and politics and religion. The city's ruling elite still ate there. Pelosi, Brown, the former mayor, all the known and hidden power brokers. One night, Hatfield brought up his disenchantment with the Catholic Church, echoing his father's own discontent, and complained that it had lost its edge and become too pacifist. No fire, no brimstone. If you're looking for fire and brimstone, Hicks said, you should check out my old friend, Rabbi Nirsham, toughest Jew I know. The more he heard about this rebellious Rebbe, hence the Reb, the more curious Jack got. Although he'd been raised Catholic, he'd always been attracted to his mother's history and culture. So a few days later, he set up a meet with Nirsham, discovered a kindred soul, and the two became instant friends. And when the Rev found out Hatfield had Jewish blood, he insisted Jack join him and his friends on Friday nights for prayer, vodka, and a home-cooked meal, an invitation Jack had accepted more than once. This is from Abuse of Power, page 169. Hicks had been right. Nirsham was a tough old Jew. The product of an Orthodox day school, the Rev had fallen out of love with Judaism in his late teens, and much to his parents' dismay, decided to rebel. He was a hippie in the 60s, later a boxer. Then in his middle years, he rediscovered his roots with a fierce passion and spent 5 years studying Jewish law at a rabbinical seminary in New York. This was followed by a year in Israel before returning to San Francisco as an ordained rabbi. The Reb was a black hat, a Chabad Lubavitch Hasid, who often spent weeks at a time in Tel Aviv. Jack himself hadn't been here in years. The first thing he noticed now was how much the place had grown. Comparisons to New York were no longer as laughable as they'd once been. Tel Aviv was a thriving metropolis perched on the edge of the Mediterranean. Everything about it screamed big city. So where are we headed, he asked the rabbi as they took the exit. First, we do something about those clothes. Jack was wearing jeans and a suede leather jacket. You want to blend in with us. You'll have to look the part. Hatfield had once asked him why Hasidic Jews always wore dark clothing. And Nirsham explained they were more concerned with what was on the inside rather than what was fashionable. In fact, these Hasids wore 19th-century Polish business garb. They were stuck in a fashion time warp. I'm not so sure about blending in, Jack said. If I dressed like you, I'd probably look more like Johnny Cash than Menachem Schneerson.
The rabbi smiled. Bring a guitar, you'll get all the girls. It hadn't taken much convincing to get the rabbi involved in Jack's plight. The Reb was rumored to have connections to both Mossad and the Israeli mafia. And while he wasn't a violent man, he'd never shied from a good fight. He was also known to quote Rabbi Meir Kahane, the founder of the Radical Jewish Defense League, who was assassinated in a Manhattan hotel room in 1990 by persons unknown. Every Jew, a 22, the Reb had said more than once. A staunch proponent of the Second Amendment, the Reb had always supported a well-armed citizenry, which he believed was the only way to keep another Castro or Stalin or Hitler or Chavez from rising in America. The one thing that stops an evil government from seizing total power, he once told Jack, is fear of millions of armed citizens. The Brits learned that lesson a couple of hundred years ago. Yet despite his tough talk, the Reb was genuinely a kind and friendly man. He acted as a missionary to fallen Jews he met in the streets of San Francisco, trying to bring them back to God. He'd saved many a drugged-out soul over the years, and they loved him for throwing them a spiritual life preserver when they were drowning. In some ways, Jack was in need of a life preserver himself, and once he told his story, the Reb was all too happy to help. Michael Savage, Abuse of Power, the finest novel written about San Francisco since Jack London, in my opinion. And it's in my humble opinion. I wouldn't say it if I actually didn't believe it. I mean, you think it's tongue-in-cheek? You're mistaken. My descriptions of San Francisco and of the Bay and of boating have never been surpassed by anybody that I know of, or I wouldn't have written the book. I guarantee it.
Wait, hang on. Before I go, how much money do you need to earn each month? Huh? That's what IncomeAtHome.com wants to know. They'll help you make that happen. IncomeAtHome.com is America's leading work-from-home business. They have an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. They're affiliated with a multi-billion dollar company. Plus, they do business in over 80 countries. They are legit. Your age, education, experience, it doesn't matter. You can do this. You can literally earn money on your computer from your kitchen table 24/7. All you need is a little spare time and their one-on-one coaching to earn great money from home. If you're worried about job security or retirement, if you're ready to make great money from home, bar time or full, IncomeAtHome.com is adding my listeners in record numbers. So check them out. Visit IncomeAtHome.com. Check them out. That's IncomeAtHome.com.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
When the announcement was made about Osama bin Laden having been killed, I congratulated the president and the intelligence community, as well as, of course, SEAL Team 6 for their extraordinary valor in carrying out this this direction. So I acknowledge the president's success and think he has every right to take credit for him having ordered that that attack. But at the same time, I think it was very disappointing for the president to try and make this a political item by suggesting that I wouldn't have ordered such a raid. Of course I would have.
Back in September, we all paused to remember the 9/11 attacks. That one day changed the very way we all live and think. In fact, the Red Cross now recommends that we have a surplus of food in case of disaster, weather, or power outages. That's why I recommend and personally use WiseFoodStorage.com. WiseFoodStorage.com provides affordable and complete delicious ready-made meals for emergencies or even camping. I know more about food than anybody in radio. I have a PhD from the University of California in nutrition. These foods are nutritionally sound for good health. Visit WiseFoodStorage.com. Get a free entree sample by entering the promo code SAVAGE, and then you'll get free shipping on any order. SAVAGE. WiseFoodStorage.com or call 855-FOODWISE, and be sure to mention SAVAGE for a free sample and free shipping on any order. Be wise and be ready with WiseFoodStorage.com.
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. It fooled me. We can't get fooled again.
That the whole thing? That was the former president to see the state the country was in. He couldn't even remember the limerick. But, I mean, thank God this guy at least uses a teleprompter where he can remember a joke. I mean, which way do you want? A guy who couldn't remember a joke and didn't use a teleprompter? Or a guy who uses a teleprompter and doesn't even tell jokes? How does this country run? How in the world does this country run? Does it run anymore? You know that I'm actually drained from the election It seems like it's been going on since 1914. This is like the guns of August. How long has this been going on, this election? I'm exhausted. Everyone's dropping out except Obama. No one's running against them. They're very smart, the Democrats. No, I expect any day to wake up and Barney Frank will be a Republican running for the presidency. I don't know what to make of it anymore. It's like a pastiche of insanity. All right, so all we can do is just watch the world go by. Partial records of the House of Representatives vote on the immigrant. Did you hear what they did with immigration while you slept? We're arguing over nothing. I almost fainted when I saw this story. I don't know whether it's on purpose or what's going on here. Well, look, all I can do as a talk show is to try to sort through all of this and say that it's very depressing out there. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's the day. I don't know. Maybe it's yesterday's trip to Miami. The long ride down, the long ride back. I never saw people drive like they do here my entire life. I don't know how this goes on. You drive on an interstate here in Florida, like from Miami north. You got morons driving 120 miles an hour, cutting off within an inch of your bumper and swerving into the next lane. Where's the Florida Highway Patrol? I'm sorry, they're being arrested by Miami police. Now that's where they are, right? I forgot. Now that's what's going on. It is like a cowboy scene out here. It really is. But Miami's a beautiful city unto itself in its own way. I don't know why they call it one of the most depressing cities. I think what it is, if you add up the incidence of suicide and the amount of antidepressants prescribed, because it's a very large aging population. It's like the elephant's burial grounds. They come out either on Medicare, it's free, right? And the mill, the doctor mill, you want the depressant, we got the antidepressant. What else? You got a prostate trouble? Here, take a prostate pill. Your lower back hurts? Here, take a back pill. Carter's big pill. Carter's big back pill. What else you need? 6-8 pills? Because the pharmaceutical companies want more drugs prescribed. The doctors don't care. They're quacks. They get paid to do it. The government loves it because it builds up the amount of taxes they can steal from us. So it's not that they're really using them. I mean, maybe they're flushing. Or maybe they're taking them back to Flushing, New York, and selling them on the street outside junior high schools. They vote in several different cities, most of the folks down here. The New Yorkers who live in the southern Florida area, they vote in two or three places in every election. Remember I did that thing many years ago? I was down here during the election. I forget what year, 1980? No, I wasn't even radio. 2000, remember? I did a Beowulf. You got to dig that up for my new listeners. As my show surges, I've got to remember there's all sorts of new listeners who never heard me. And they have to hear the genius that they've missed over these years. It's been going on since 1994. But in 2000, I was in Florida during the election. Wasn't Gore running against somebody? I forget who. Carter's little liver. And it was Gore versus whatever, Bush. Bush, right? That's right. That's where there was the big thing with the Cuban guys with the white shirts threatened to beat up the lawyers from NYU who were rigging the vote. Remember that when they ran out of the booths? All of the boys from NYU got terrified that the Cuban guys in white shirts showed up. They got so scared, they got on a short line bus and ran right back to the Bronx. And that's how Bush won. It was one gang fighting the other. So I wrote a poem called Can of Worms, but I can't believe what's going on down here now. The amount of fraud in Florida, Medicare fraud. You read about it every day, these doctors. They pour in from Queens, Brooklyn. And many of them went to like medical school in Guadalajara. You know the kind of doctor? You know that kind of we had a kid in the neighborhood who couldn't go to regular medical school. All right, so look, he wanted very badly to be a doctor. So where'd he go to school? Guadalajara, Mexico. You know how good the doctors are in Mexico. I mean, this is top of the line. If you can't get into Harvard Medical School or Stanford or, Columbia, what you do is the next best thing is you go to Guadalajara Medical School. And then you get a medical degree and you come back and you probably schmear someone and you become So he comes back, this kid. He was like the schmendrick of the neighborhood, a fat schlub. But I got to hand it to him. He wanted to be a doctor and nothing could deter him. So he went to Mexico. He got a medical degree. He got a license somehow and became a plastic surgeon. He retired many years ago. I have no idea how many people he may have butchered who put a nose on their behind. I have no idea what he did. You know the kind of plastic surgeon he must have been. If you went in to have your eyes lifted, you probably wound up with your nose on the top of your forehead. But nevertheless, he had a career from the Guadalajara Institute. But this is what I'm saying. This is the kind of doctors that you find down here in Florida, in South Florida, by and large. Which is why I don't want to ever get sick when I'm down here. God forbid. There's no, I don't see, one thing I don't see down here. You know what I want to talk about for 1 second now that my mind is working again? My mind is running now on about two cylinders. I have a V16 engine in my head, Right now I'm running on like two cylinders. Something's wrong. I know something broke down here in Florida. Maybe a tsetse fly bit me or something. I don't know what's wrong. My brain is not functioning. It's not firing. I don't know what's wrong. Nothing particular happened. It couldn't have been just the ride down. Maybe it was bad fish. It could have been the fish that I had last night wasn't good. Oh, here's another thing. It's like someone, we had dinner cooked in the house, and we were all eating like the top of the line. And then we found out afterwards that the green beans came from Whole Foods, and the package, if you looked at it, came from China. Half the food that we ate, although it came from Whole Foods, was from China. The origin was China. It just shows you. You know, how do we know how much poison is in our system from this the world global economy, the garbage that you feed, put in your mouth? You know what you get in a restaurant? Like tonight, when this show is over, for example, I'm on the East Coast now, which is a freak out for me. Because normally on the West Coast, I start at 3, I'm, you know, over at 6. Here I start at 6, I'm over at 9. So I have to immediately jump in a car and race to a restaurant. Almost nobody is open after 9:30. That I want to go to. I like simple restaurants. Already everyone's asleep. So I get to the Chinese restaurant tonight when they're about to close. What do you think they're going to give me? The freshest shrimp in the bottle? The freshest shrimp, rather, in the barrel? But I'm looking forward to a Hunan restaurant I'm going to go to down here that my mother used to go to. God rest her soul. You know what I'm saying? She loved it. I didn't know. This is a funny thing to find out. It may be genetic, and I hope it is. Because she lived to 88, God bless her. Not very good the last few years. But the dad, he died young. So I hope I got more of her genes. You know what I'm saying? The thing is, I'm a Hunan food lover. And in the San Francisco area, we happen to be blessed with a very large Chinatown. And I'm a big fan of Chinese food, even though I complain about it. Because I come out, my lips are sticking together. It's like someone put crazy glue on my lip. I start to feel like Barney Frank when I walk out of a Chinese restaurant in San Francisco, if it's a bad one. I start to tell them, has anybody got some kind of some glue remover? Because I just had an egg foo young in San Francisco. I mean, my lips don't seem to separate. I don't understand. But that's how it is. But if you go to a good one, they don't stick. So I go to a good one, which doesn't have glue in the broth. It's a Hunan food. So the Hunan is very good. So what do I know? Years later, as time goes by, in all the years I communicated with my lovely mother about Chinese and Italian food, never once did she mention her favorite restaurant was a Hunan restaurant in this area. So in deference to her, after she passed away when I came down here, I started to go to her restaurant to try to sit in the booth she sat in. I come down here once or twice a year, and I go to that restaurant. I know the food stinks. Sucks on dry ice. The worst. The worst. But because she went there, because it's somewhat familial, and most of the customers are either 85 in the 85 to 95 bracket. The men look like they're from the moon, like moon people. They're like short. They're like 5'1". They all shrivel up, but they're still eating that stuff. And what I love, what's most beautiful about it is they're still couples in their 90s together. I don't know how that works. They didn't kill each other with a stroke or a heart attack from the way they talk to each other either. You ever get next to one of them behind the locks line next door at the deli, you could get killed altogether. I don't care how small they are. But it's kind of cute to see older people in their late 80s or 90s who are still couples in a disposable society where guys throw girls away and girls throw guys away. There's something beautiful. And not only that they have a genetic capacity to eat this bad Chinese food and not get a coronary occlusion, unless there's something they're taking here that I don't know about yet, some kind of fish special trick fish oil from Palm Beach. I don't really know what it is. Nevertheless, that's where I'm going to go to eat tonight, with about 2 minutes to spare by the time I get there. And my lips will stick together, and I shall sleep like a baby. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Talk radio is not a dying medium. It is stronger than ever. It is stronger than it's ever been before in my 16 years in radio. And we're going to be, as Harry Truman said, give him you-know-what for the next couple of years. That's our job. Our job is to be watchdogs, not to be lapdogs. And I want to thank you for giving me total and absolute freedom to do so. That's the point I'm trying to make. I wouldn't have lasted a week with another syndicator. I could never have sat down after a show and been deconstructed where they say, well, you said this, tomorrow don't say that. That's would have been the end of it for me. I've had total freedom. I need total freedom to function. And I want to thank you again. I'm glad we're going to be working together. And I know the American people, who particularly the millions and millions of people who listen to this show, are going to breathe a sigh of relief that we have this year to look forward to together. It's had its ups and downs. But right now, we have seen that talk radio and the Savage Nation are responsible for the mighty blow that is being struck against socialism in America. And I believe this will grow when it forces the Democrats off the political landscape for having introduced Democrat socialism and worse to the United States of America.
Wait, hang on before I go.
Mother's Day is coming up. Now is the time to show all the moms in our lives how much we appreciate them. Our mothers, mothers-in-laws, wives. Now's the time to make them feel special with a beautiful floral bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. Don't settle for less. Send the best. Moms are going to love the rose and lily bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. She'll love this beautiful bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. 1-800-Flowers.com has a very special offer just for my listeners. You order the rose and lily bouquet, and you get a free clear vase for only $34.99. That's $25 off the regular price. For this or other Mother's Day offers, go to 1-800-Flowers.com. Click on the radio microphone in the upper right corner and enter Savage. Or call 1-800-Flowers and mention my last name, Savage.
Savage.
one 800 449 8255. Let's go to New York City, the heart of the everything, WOR Bob. Thank you for calling on this dark night. What's on your mind?
I'm a religious man. I don't approve of, you know, homosexual behavior. But when I hire a plumber, I don't really know what he does in his bedroom. It's not my business.
Well, now that's a bad choice of a metaphor to a homosexual plumber, but let's not go into that. I would say that if you hire a plumber, he shouldn't be a Democrat. But the issue is, yes, of course, a person's sexuality is their own business. I hear what you're saying. However, when you're running for office, if you're caught in one lie after another, whatever the scandal may be, you lose your credibility for the voter, don't you? Indiana Sid, welcome. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Sid, what's on your mind?
Well, Mike, I was driving home today, and you had me rolling. I was laughing so hard, I look in my rearview mirror, the blue lights are on. The cop comes to my window, I'm still laughing. He doesn't want to hear it. I tried to explain, but I'm crying, Mike.
But wait, I know I was funny because I get into one of my totally, when I get into a black mood, only my insane Dali-esque view of the world can save me. But were you laughing at the restaurant riff?
Yes.
The parents with the mouth sticking together, that whole thing?
Been there, done it. Hey,
you know what, Sid? It was worth the ticket. It's a shame the cop doesn't have a sense of humor. Sid, I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. If you only told the cop you're listening to my show, it would have been a gamble. But 90% of the cops in America would love you for that.
Savage.
No one is talking about the $1 billion that was given away by Obama to Democratic donors for more solar projects that will no doubt produce very little in electricity. Plain and simple, graft and corruption on a scale unknown in American history. And that's why I want to talk about the Borgias, B-O-R-G-I-A-S. And I'm going to ask you, who are the Borgias of today? Have you heard of the Borgias? You see, once upon a time in Italy, in the 1500s, there was a family known as the Borgias. And they were one of the most powerful families in Europe, patrons of the arts. Most brilliant personalities of the era regularly visited their court, prominent in church and political affairs. But what the Borgias were most known for was their corrupt rule. Though more than one member of the Borgia family became pope, they were known for crimes such as adultery, theft, rape, bribery, incest, and murder. One of the first great patriarchs of the Borgia family was Rodrigo. He became a cardinal in the Catholic Church while he maintained an illicit relationship with his mistress on the side. Became pope in 1492 after bribing 17 cardinals. His main interests lay in acquiring more wealth, seducing women, and making his family as powerful as possible. He was accused of charging money for sacraments, nepotism, attending public orgies, and torturing and executing his enemies. Rodrigo Borgia's son was Cesare. As soon as he graduated from the university, his father made him a cardinal. Cesare is believed to have murdered his brother, Giovanni. After his father's death, Cesare was responsible for choosing the next pope. He also had his sister Lucrezia's husband murdered when he was no longer politically useful to the family. Rodrigo Borgia's daughter was Lucrezia Borgia. She was married off by the family several times to forge political alliances. She was a notorious poisoner, and she became famous for her skill at political intrigue. As we may know by now, the Borgias lived a very long time ago. Their world of political intrigue and debauchery is very distant from our own.
But given the fact that we still see powerful families enriching each other at the expense of the public today, I want to ask you a question. Who do you think are the Borgias of today? And do you think that the Obama administration is more or less corrupt than that of Bush or of any of those of the past? Very interesting question. Because if you confront a liberal with the fact that the Solyndra loan, over $500 million, went up in smoke, and that one of the directors of this solar company was just given another loan for $700 million, as if they say, screw the public, we're untouchable, we're above the law, we are the law. The untouchables are now the law. Remember there was a series on television in the 50s called The Untouchables, where the heroes were the good guys, and they always went after the bad guys? They went after the untouchables, Elliot Ness. What do you do if you wake up and you find out the untouchables are running America? Many people think they are. Many people think they are, which is why I worry about things such as, well, everything else.
Listen to this. Mother's Day will be here soon, and Michael Savage made sure Mrs. Savage is getting Sherry's Berries. Sherry's Berries aren't just impressive, they're delicious. And Michael Savage has a special offer from Sherry's Berries just for you. But you must order this week. Don't wait. Send giant dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries starting at just $19.99. That's more than 40% in savings. Sherry's Berries are huge, fresh, and juicy. Just go to berries.com, click on the radio microphone, and type in Savage. And if you order now, Savage Radio listeners can double their berries for just $10 more. Don't be too busy for mom. Get Sherry's Berries starting at just $19.99. Call 866-FRUIT-02 or visit berries.com. Click on the microphone in the top right corner and click Savage. To order now. Offer expires midnight on Friday.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.